Good day. It is Thursday, March 6, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, as the state prepares for a busy election year, one county makes changes to its polling sites.
Plus, a physical fitness event this weekend celebrates two very different causes. And we visit with the founder of the Soweto Gospel Choir. The group will perform this evening at Walton Arts Center.
But first, a lawsuit aimed at halting more stringent requirements for canvassers gathering signatures for ballot measures has succeeded in court. Circuit Judge Mary McGowan found all six provisions of the law to be unconstitutional. Opponents of the law, including attorney David Couch, who argued the case before the court, says it puts unwarranted burdens on canvassers, such as throwing out entire submissions because of just one error.
So if you turned in 62,507 what I'll call raw signatures, and some of those petition forms had material defects or obvious fraud, or there were a bunch of other elements that they had, then the Secretary of State was obligated to not count those at all.
But proponents of the legislation argue new requirements for petitions are needed. Democratic State Senator Robert Thompson of Paragold, who co-sponsored the law, did not comment specifically on the case, but says he believes the law strikes the right balance.
It seemed to me that what became Act 1413 preserved the rights of people to put petitions on the ballot, while at the same time enacting some anti-fraud measures.
A spokesman for the Attorney General's office says they are disappointed with the decision and are considering an appeal.
Nearly 50 Arkansas school districts, including several in Northwest Arkansas, are asking for waivers from the state to reduce the number of snow days that must be made up this school year. Kimberly Friedman, spokeswoman for the Arkansas Department of Education, says the department considers several factors in determining whether to grant a waiver.
Schools had to have missed at least 10 days in order to apply for a waiver. And as of Friday, we had 47 school districts who had applied for a waiver, and we still have school districts either sending amendments in or new school districts applying for waivers.
Schools are required by the state to have 178 instructional days in the academic year. But Friedman says some districts have missed nearly 20 days because of repeated rounds of wintry weather hitting the state.
They can use previously scheduled teacher work days as instructional days. They can actually use some of their holidays to make up some of their days that they've missed due to inclement weather. If they're using part or all of spring break, if they're willing to add days on to the end of the school year, and other proposed options that we're looking at. But they do have to show that they're making an effort to try to make up as many of those days that they can.
The deadline for districts to apply is Friday.
Yesterday, we reported that an investment group in Kansas City is acquiring Hot Springs-based Mountain Valley Water Company. Collins Pugh, the director of marketing for Mountain Valley, says that in addition to a switch in majority control of the company, production will also increase.
Great Range Capital has become our majority shareholder of Mountain Valley Spring Company, and everything's continuing business as usual. We've added an extra line at our facility. And so we've added some extra employees in the manufacturing side as well as our sales side.
Pugh says Mountain Valley will continue to focus its efforts in the premium market for bottled water. She expects the infusion of capital to help the brand expand operations. Mountain Valley is already carried in parts of all 50 states.
A Central Arkansas judge who was a candidate for the Arkansas Court of Appeals has removed himself from the race after admitting to making controversial comments in an online forum. According to Talk Business Arkansas, Judge Mike Maggio of Conway yesterday issued a statement in which he admitted to making online comments about a high-profile adoption case, as well as comments about women, sex, and other inappropriate subjects. The liberal-leaning blog Blue Hog Report brought the comments to light earlier this week.
The U.S. Senate has approved another judicial appointee to the federal bench in Arkansas. According to the City Wire, the Senate yesterday approved the nomination of Timothy Brooks, a Fayetteville attorney, to serve as a U.S. District Court judge for the Western District of Arkansas. Both of Arkansas senators praised Brooks's confirmation, touting his experience and background as qualifications for the appointment. Brooks has been a partner with Taylor Law Partners in Fayetteville since 1993, where he has spent his 24-year legal career.
Tyson Foods has been awarded a multi-million dollar contract to supply chickens to the federal government. According to the Department of Defense, the $444 million contract means the Springdale-based poultry company will provide commercial chicken items for 3 years to support overseas military customers. Tyson won the contract over eight other bidding companies.
The University of Arkansas women's basketball team last night fought to the buzzer, but a missed last-second shot prevented a win over Ole Miss in the opening round of the SEC tournament in Duluth, Georgia. The Razorbacks lost with a final score of 63-62, putting the team's season record at 12-19 and 2-14 in conference play.
Forecast this evening calls for mostly clear skies, with overnight lows from 28 in northwest Arkansas to 31 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs around 63 degrees. Tomorrow evening, mostly cloudy with overnight lows from 35 to 40.
Last week, the Sebastian County Election Commission voted to make changes to some of the county's polling sites. Ozarks at-large Timothy Dennis spoke with the chair of the Election Commission to find out why, and he has this report.
It's an election year, which means that changes to polling sites in Sebastian County are to be expected. So says Lee Webb, chair of the Sebastian County Election Commission.
We try to handle business during election cycle so we don't call special meetings. So that's why these things seem to come up during an election, because we handle them at the same meetings we handle elections. We try to save money that way.
And saving county taxpayers money is the main reason he says the Election Commission voted last week to consolidate some polling sites in Sebastian County, particularly some in areas where polling sites were already close to each other.
One of them we found a conflict with the law because we had two polling sites in the same precinct, so we cleared that error up. It was more trying to get, say we had a small polling site and we had a larger polling site very near. We decided to just do everything with the same amount of manpower, we could handle the additional voters. We feel we can go, you know, anywhere between 3,000 and 4,000 voters at a polling site pretty easily.
Those affected polling places include sites in Fort Smith, Barling, and New Providence. Webb says that each polling site costs about $1,000 on average to run in each election, and that by merging the seven locations, the county could save an estimated $14,000 on the primary and general elections alone this year. But he does concede that the cost of running polling sites does vary.
Especially like on a small election, say a school board election that not very many people turn out. We recently had a sales tax election in Greenwood that we had less than 100 people turn out for, but we had all polling sites open.
But aside from cost savings to the county's taxpayers, Webb says that cutting down on the number of polling sites also helps deal with another problem.
Every year we struggle to find enough poll workers to work the sites. So this also helps us decrease the number of sites. It's just basically that many less people we have to have. So you take average, you know, 4 or 5 people per site. We just basically save, you know, with 7 sites, you save 35 people that you have to go find to work.
Consolidation of polling sites isn't anything new. Webb says that polling places have been combined in the past for a variety of reasons.
We look at voter turnout at a precinct. You know, if it starts dwindling down, you know, it becomes less cost effective to keep it open. We look at new, you know, several years ago we went through all the ADA stuff, so we had to go through all of our sites, it wasn't ADA compliant. And sometimes we've had it where whoever the polling site was, whether it be a church or a school or a library, says that we no longer want to do it anymore. And sometimes that's the reason for consolidating.
Something that would be new, though, is the implementation of polling centers or polling sites designed to handle large volumes of voters from multiple precincts.
We've been talking polling centers for several years. And one site, for instance, the one that we had a conflict in, it had 2 sites in one precinct. One of the sites is a potential polling center. One site wasn't. So logically, we closed the one that wasn't a potential polling center.
Webb says that creating polling centers isn't on the Election Commission's near-term agenda and that they likely wouldn't be implemented in Sebastian County until 2016 at the earliest. But Webb says that there is another new way to vote that could be implemented sooner than that.
Well, we also voted our meeting to conduct off-site early voting at our Dallas Street Library location. We haven't determined what election we're going to do that at yet because we're having to train a new election coordinator. And we want to be comfortable with the new person on board before we throw that at him.
Even when the off-site early voting center is opened, early voting will continue at the county courthouses in Fort Smith and in Greenwood. In the meantime, if your polling site is one of those affected by the recent changes, expect a notice in the mail from the Sebastian County Clerk regarding your new polling site before the primary election in May. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
In around 25 minutes on this edition of Ozarks, we learn about an inaugural event that is all about physical fitness and having fun.
We're going to do some hopscotch stuff on the sidewalks there, and depending on how muddy it is, considering we've gotten so much snow and that all has to melt, we will do a few things with the trees. We have a fun one where we're tying a belt around their waist. With the back has a tissue box, and there's balls in the tissue box, and they got to shake their butt to make the balls fall out.
We'll learn about this Sunday Sweatnam Challenge benefiting the Down Syndrome Connection of Northwest Arkansas ahead on Ozarks at Large.
Johnny Dollar.
Gunsmoke.
The sounds of old-time radio are reaching a new generation thanks to Ed Walker.
Some of the kids that send me emails say, we put our transistor radio under the pillow and listen to your show until we go to sleep.
Mining the golden age of radio on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen to All Things Considered this afternoon from 3 to 6 on 91.3 FM.
Traveling west on Highway 412 toward Taneytown. On your right will be Harbor Meadows, a planned residential and business community complete with fountains and tree-lined streets. Across the street, on your left, hidden behind a deserted gas station and other industrial buildings, you'll find the unmarked yellow brick building that is the Springdale Treatment Center. I enter through the glass doors on a quiet afternoon to find rows of empty black chairs. But at 5:45 a.m., those chairs were filled with patients waiting to get their doses of methadone. This corporately owned methadone treatment center has been in Springdale since 2007, though many don't know it exists. I certainly didn't. Since its opening, the center has seen over 800 patients pass through its doors. Methadone was developed in the late 1930s in Germany as an analgesic. After traveling to the United States in the 1960s, its properties for treating opiate addiction were discovered. Today, it is used for the treatment of addiction to heroin and prescription painkillers like Dilaudid and OxyContin. If truly addicted to these drugs, withdrawal is so terrible that many users use their drugs again or risk death. Connie Phillips is the program director here at the Springdale Treatment Center. She says a potential patient must be going through withdrawal in order to be considered for treatment.
Sweating, they sweat profusely, they can't sleep at night, very achy legs, and they jerk, really bad back pain, neck pain, just all over. They just hurt all over. A lot of times they're throwing up, sick to their stomach, diarrhea, the flu times 10.
Symptoms are so severe that many are terrified to come off their drugs. That's where methadone comes in. It can take 1 year on methadone for a patient to stabilize physically, emotionally, and mentally. If a potential patient doesn't have it bad, the center will refer them to a 12-step program or residential treatment facility. Methadone is a long-acting pharmaceutical and can also be addictive. If someone has a chance to come off his or her drug without it, that is always the best bet. Many patients here have been on methadone for over 2 years. Some will be coming here for life. But that typically isn't the case.
And that's always our goal, is to be able to eventually get everyone off of methadone and to detox them very slowly. At the same time, they're starting to get new friends and new places to go, get jobs. A lot of people come here and they don't have a job, and within a week or two, they're able to go out and work again.
The center currently has about 210 patients. Many come in every day to receive their daily dose. There are four phases of treatment. The first, phase one, patients are required to take a weekly drug test to ensure that they aren't still using. Treatment is more than just a dose. There are five counselors staffed here, and patients are required to meet with them, in addition to attending group sessions. After a 90-day period, if someone is doing well, they can phase up and come in perhaps every 4 days and take home some doses. To take them home, the doses are placed in a locked bag for transport and must be kept locked when they reach their homes. Just as the DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency, regulates the center, it conducts callbacks to regulate take-homes. A patient has 24 hours to bring in their doses for a check to make sure they have the quantity they should have and that the seals on the liquid doses have not been tampered with. Two pharmacists come in two nights a week to portion out the doses, and two full-time licensed practical nurses, or LPNs, pass them out to patients each and every day from 5:45 a.m. to 10:30 a.m., and again from noon to 1 o'clock, from inside the med room and through one of two dosing windows. Though I'm not allowed inside, Phillips opens the door to the med room using one key from a ring that holds many.
I can find the right. I'm getting too many keys to keep up with here. But this is where the nurses are, and of course, we're highly monitored. We have cameras everywhere. I can watch everything that's going on here. We keep all the medicine locked up in a safe, and the money in a safe, and we're highly regulated by the DEA and the state of Arkansas for treatment centers, and CARF, the national accreditation.
Methadone is also regulated under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Many patients are referred by other agencies such as hospitals or mental health professionals. Some, a parole or probation officer. But most come through word of mouth.
People see their friends who used to be opiate addicts getting clean and doing really well. and they spread the word, and they'll tell them, hey, you need to go to the methadone clinic. And so, by far, I think most of our people are referred by other people or somebody they knew that went here.
That is how one patient, Corey, he declined to give his last name, came to the treatment center 2 years ago.
He kind of filled us in on what happens here. And, you know, like I said, I was kind of afraid to come here at first. I didn't know. Honestly, I wasn't afraid of coming here. I was afraid of, I guess, leaving the addiction. Afraid of being sick, if it would make me sick to come here. Or I didn't know really much about methadone or methadone treatment, anything like that. So,
like many opiate users of the day, Corey's addiction began with an injury. He was successful, working two jobs when he hurt his back.
When I first started doing pills, I had back problems, and I got prescribed to just hydrocodones. And then I moved on to something bigger and better, and started taking them the wrong way, the way you're not supposed to take them. I was snorting them, and I was taking oxycodone, 30s, 15s, anything I could get my hands on.
Corey hit rock bottom, stealing from his mother to pay for drugs, neglecting his girlfriend at the time, now his wife, and their newborn baby. Drug tests at the center cost $12. And remember, patients must take one each week, and a daily dose is $14. In total, it is about a $110 weekly expense to be a methadone patient. The center does not take insurance, though some companies will reimburse their clients. But compared to the $200 to $300 a day Corey was spending on the street to get pills, it's a bargain. He isn't trading one addiction for another. Methadone users don't get high and are allowed to drive, work, care for their families, anything everyone else is allowed to do, and patients cannot be discriminated against for their use. Methadone also acts as an opiate blocker, filling up the spot in the drug's receptors in the brain so that if a patient were to snort a pill of OxyContin or to take a hit of heroin, the drugs would have no effect on them. Without this methadone treatment center, Corey says he'd be in jail or dead. Without his now 5-year-old child and now another baby.
Looking back and seeing what all I was doing, I stole from my mom. I hit rock bottom, you know, that's really why I came through the front door was I hit rock bottom and I wanted to get back up. Once you're up and hit rock bottom, you start to look back and you're like, man, I want this back. And, you know, finally I'm there. You know, I got it back. And it's good. It's really good.
The center keeps pictures in their computer of patients on their first day here. It pops up every time they come in. Corey wishes they'd change his. He was just 140 pounds, way too skinny for his tall frame, his face covered in sores. Now he looks healthy. And though he didn't say his current weight, he says he's getting fat. He has a different group of friends and is happy to work every day and raise his young family. He looks forward to the day when he will be free from methadone as well. Though, as Connie Phillips says, it will be a long road to freedom.
This will be with them for the rest of their life, you know, because their brain has been changed. It's been altered. And there are times when, you know, something might trigger a craving or a desire or, you know, somebody, a death in the family sometimes. So we try to work on coping skills so they can learn how to cope with life.
One of Phillips' main concerns with the center is getting the word out about the good work they do in the community and the truth about methadone treatment. Though a light painkiller, it is not a serious help with pain. If a methadone patient breaks their leg and heads to the ER, they are not drug-seeking. They are in pain like any other human. Also, if someone were to become pregnant while addicted to an opiate, methadone treatment is their best bet for a successful pregnancy and a healthy baby. To quit something cold turkey could kill the baby, and the effects of methadone on a child are significantly less than an alternative. In an effort to educate, the center welcomes counseling interns and student nurses. Phillips sees their community growing, and the center is expanding further into the building they occupy. New offices for more counselors will be available, in addition to a more private room for group sessions. By the end of this year, Phillips anticipates serving upwards of 300 patients. For more information, visit methadonetreatmentcenter.com and search for Springdale. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas.
In just a few minutes, more on a call for volunteers in some of Arkansas's national forests.
But first, a few notes. It will be a busy weekend at home for women's athletics at the University of Arkansas. The Razorback women's tennis team has competition scheduled for noon tomorrow and Sunday. Arkansas will face Auburn and Alabama, respectively. The Razorback softball team will host the Razorback Invitational this weekend. Due to field conditions following the recent winter storm, the tournament schedule has been adjusted to begin Saturday and run through Sunday. Arkansas will play host to Bradley and Mississippi Valley State at Bogle Park during the two-day round robin.
The University of Arkansas Fort Smith's men's basketball team has earned the title of Heartland Conference Champions for the second year in a row. The Lions will host the two-day four-team conference tournament, which begins tomorrow at Stubblefield Center. UAFS has the number one seed, and the Lions will face the number four seed, the University of Texas of the Permian Basin, in their first match.
Spring break camp at Hobbs State Park brings the outdoor experience up close and personal. The first of several fun-filled and memory-making nature exploration day camps at Hobbs Park for 2014 runs through March 26th through March 28th. This day camp is for nature lovers 9 to 12 years of age with a passion for hiking and spending time outside exploring and learning. Hiking, games, live animals, nature-related programs, crafts, snacks, stream studies, and a t-shirt will be included. The day camps run from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day. The cost is $50 plus tax per child. Pre-registration and prepayment are required. For more, call Hobbs State Park at 789-5000.
Ongoing research at the Spiro Mounds will be a topic of discussion yet again at an archaeological talk held on the University of Arkansas Fort Smith campus. Dr. George Sabo III, director of the Arkansas Archaeological Survey, will present Renewing the World, New Research at the Spiro Ceremonial Center at 7 p.m. March 18th in the Reynolds Room of the Smith Pendergraft Campus Center. Sabo's presentation summarizes the research being performed at the site while outlining plans for a new collaborative effort between the Arkansas Archaeological Survey, the Oklahoma Archaeological Survey, and the Caddo and Wichita Indian Nations. March is also Arkansas Archaeological Month, an annual celebration honoring Arkansas's cultural history, of which SABO's presentation is a part. Exhibits, lectures, demonstrations, tours, open houses, workshops, and other activities are scheduled throughout the state at museums, historic sites, state parks, libraries, and colleges.
And one music note, the auditorium in Eureka Springs will host a concert and dance event celebrating the beginning of spring, which is March 21st. I think we're all looking forward to spring.
Absolutely.
Organizers of the Spring Equinox Concert have planned an evening that includes original musical compositions for acoustic instruments and voices, as well as new choreography for the event. The concert is scheduled for 7 p.m. March 21st at the Odd. Admission is $5 for adults and $2 for kids at the door. For more information, email fiddlinfred51@gmail.com. The concert is part of the My Wellness Festival, which is scheduled for March 15th through the 22nd. Details available at mywellnessfestival.com.
This week on Ask Me Another, NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia, our VIP, that's very important puzzler, takes on the role of puzzle guru.
Though she may dress in raw meat, the flamboyant singer of Poker Face favors this cold tomato-based Spanish vegetable soup.
Come play along with me, Ophira Eisenberg, and Daily Show co-creator Liz Winstead, next time on Ask Me Another.
Listen Saturdays at 11 a.m. to KUAF.
The Ouachita and Ozark St. Francis National Forest System is in need of Resource Advisory Committee applicants. As Ozark's at-largest Jacqueline Froelich reports, the positions are voluntary, but projects help to support local communities and economies.
The Ouachita and Ozark St. Francis National Forest staff is looking for civic-minded community members in both Arkansas and Oklahoma to apply for membership on their Resource Advisory Committee, RAC for short. Terry Crasco is a public services and planning staff officer based in Russellville. He's responsible for recreation, heritage, wilderness, wild and scenic rivers litigation, and geographic information systems matters. He says interested applicants should live within counties contiguous to National Forest Service lands.
The advisory committees look at projects that are diverse in nature. They could be on dealing with non-native invasive species and wildlife improvements. They can be forestry related. There's a whole host of things, but the largest part of what actually occurs is that we have a lot of projects that deal with infrastructure such as roads.
All of them propose projects on or near the Ouachita or Ozark St. Francis National Forests under provisions of Section 205, Title II, of the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act.
And the committee will go over and look at the projects submitted, and they will look at the integrity of the project, see if the funds are going to be spent correctly. And then if they approve them, the project is forwarded into the forest supervisor, and they look at them to see if everything is in order. And if they approve it, then it goes back for final funding approval when the project is actually going to be undertaken.
Terry Crasco says the National Forest Service values the expertise of local residents.
I think they're all pretty special, and we're looking for people that have diverse backgrounds. And, for example, we're looking for people that are involved possibly in organized labor or non-timber forest product harvester groups. People that might deal with outdoor recreation. You know, it could be someone that might have like a Campground of America or something like, are there off-highway vehicle users? And also in this category, someone that maybe works in energy and mineral development, such as an oil and gas operator.
Forest Service also seeks those experienced in the commercial timber industry for input, or federal grazing permit holders, land use permit holders, farmers. Environmentalists are welcome to apply, recreationalists, scientists, and political representatives as well. Over the past decade, The Ozark Ouachita RAC has recommended dozens of projects that yielded needed improvements across 17 counties in Arkansas. Listeners who live in rural districts on Forest Service roads understand the value of having those roads improved and maintained for residents driving to work or catching school buses.
And there is money allocated through the state that goes to the counties that have national forest acres in them. And the counties get a piece of this funding each year. So it's kind of separate from what the Forest Service does. Let's say in our normal resource activity, this is actually aimed at the county, but it also focuses back towards the national forest. So, for example, let's take a road project. There might be a road that needs 5 miles of aggregate surfacing, and there's bad culverts in it, so they need to replace a culvert.
Multiple culverts, even bridge repair and replacement on designated roads, and local labor may benefit from work contracts. Federal money is allocated specifically to RAC-approved projects only.
We need the Resource Advisory Committee to review the projects, look at the integrity of them, make sure that they're worthwhile, that the money is being spent judiciously. And they kind of have an oversight. And with this diverse backgrounds that are actually looking at it, they can kind of give a good, honest perspective on it from a lot of different viewpoints. And they are the ones that say, yes, we want to see this move forward.
The committee is comprised of 15 members who serve 3-year terms without compensation but are reimbursed for travel and per diem expenses. Meetings are typically held 2 to 3 times a year at locations within the geographic area the committee serves. Applications for membership on the Ozark Ouachita Resource Advisory Committee are due by July 8th. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To serve on the Ouachita and Ozark St. Francis Resource Advisory Committee, visit fs.usda.gov. Then click on the Projects and Policies links to the Secure Schools and Community section, or call 501-321-5318. And this information will be posted at ozarksatlarge.com.
It is Thursday, March 6th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It seems like every time we turn around, we're talking about this show.
Which one?
Miss Nelson is missing.
Well, she's still missing. We got to find her.
Apparently she is.
We're trying to help spread the word.
This is happening this weekend at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. And I've finally seen enough of it so that I understand. It's based on a book.
It is based on a book.
It is a musical.
Oh, it is. Okay.
And the whole premise is that there's a really lovely teacher named Miss Nelson who teaches in room 207. Mm-hmm. But her children are not nice.
They are not.
So Miss Nelson goes away and is replaced by the unpleasant Viola Swamp. Mm-hmm. And the children learn all sorts of valuable lessons about compassion and respect and integrity and not being mean to the really nice teacher. And of course, it is revealed in the end that Miss Nelson might have had something to do with all of this learning.
Exactly.
And this happens. Matinees at 3 and 5 on Saturday, which is unusual.
It is.
The second matinee is because so many schools were out earlier in the year. So schools are in on Saturday.
Gotcha.
So 3 and 5 on Saturday, 3 on Sunday at the Art Center in Springdale. And tickets are $9 for non-member students and $16 for non-member adults. Reservations at 751-5441.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
In just a couple of minutes, we learn about an inaugural fitness fundraising event this weekend in Fayetteville.
But first, a few other nonprofit events taking place this month. The 7th annual Dancing with the Stars of Northwest Arkansas Gala is Saturday evening from 7 to 11 at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. The event supports the progress of the Amazium, a family learning center coming to Northwest Arkansas. Saturday's event will feature a sit-down meal, silent and live auctions, and celebrity dancers performing with professional dance partners. This year's celebrity dancers are Tina Winham, Cindy McNaughton, Dr. Missy Clifton, Wiley Elliott, and Rod Bigelow. To purchase tickets, you can visit amazium.org.
Bo's 12th annual Grape Escapes will take place tomorrow evening, beginning at 6 p.m. at the Epicenter by Movie Lounge in Fort Smith. BOST is a Western Arkansas organization that provides choices and opportunities to individuals with developmental and related disabilities so that they may live, work, and play in the community. Guests will mingle to the tunes of the Dave Holland Ensemble, featuring vocalist Tabitha Graves, while sampling over 350 wines from around the world and tasting delicacies from 13 area restaurants and caterers. A live auction will also take place. For tickets, call 479-478-5554.
The Ozark Literacy Council will celebrate 50 years of service to Northwest Arkansas with their Pigtails event Thursday, March 13th at the Fayetteville Town Center beginning at 6 p.m. Special honoree that evening will be Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan. Live music will be provided by Bill Dollar and Loose Change with catering from Mermaid Seafood Restaurant. Tickets and more information at ozarkliteracy.org.
The Pineapple Tree Dance Company is a Northwest Arkansas-based contemporary ballet company made up entirely of dancers and choreographers from the Northwest Arkansas region. These artists have come together as volunteers to create a beautiful art in motion for the community. In this first annual concert production, the company will perform original works of ballet, modern and contemporary movement, set to music by Bach, Duke Ellington, Ennio Morricone, and more. This event takes place Friday and Saturday, March 28th and 29th at 7:30 p.m. inside Star Theater at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. A community outreach demonstration will take place Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. For tickets or more information, visit pineappletreedancecompany.org.
Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge's 24th annual Kite Festival is Saturday, March 22nd. This year's theme, Art with an Altitude, is sponsored by Kaleida Kites of Eureka Springs. It's a family-free event, and attendees can bring their own kites or buy one at the refuge. The celebration includes vendors, contests, and fun activities for parents and children. Kaleida Kites experts will be available to assist children in kite making and flying techniques. Donations to the refuge are requested for kite making assistance. Admission is free for kite flying, and regular admission prices apply to tour the refuge wildlife on display. Proceeds finance rescue and ongoing care for more than 135 tigers, lions, cougars, and other wildlife that make the sanctuary a lifelong home. For additional information, you can call 479-253-6596 or email kaleidokites, that's kaleidokites at hotmail.com. For more information about Turpentine Creek, you can visit turpentinecreek.org or call 253-5841.
Sunday afternoon, when the snow has melted and temperatures are expected to reach the lower 60s, the lawn of Old Main in Fayetteville will be abuzz as hundreds of participants take part in the inaugural Swetnam Challenge, an obstacle course and physical challenge to celebrate the lives of Rachel Swetnam and Trey Varner. The University of Arkansas students were killed in a tragic boating accident last summer. Bryce Anderson is a trainer at Clubhouse Fitness, a sponsor of the event. Anderson is also the founder for the event.
Rachel was my client, and Trey was a member at Clubhouse Fitness as well. He was also about to start working with me. I had actually planned on working with Rachel the Monday after the accident. So I talked to her that Saturday. And terrible story.
Anderson and Clubhouse wanted to do something to honor their lives in a way that would also honor their families. He says that the two loved fitness, enjoyed showing up at the gym, and had big personalities. At last year's Polo in the Ozarks event, Anderson came across the table of the Down Syndrome Connection of Northwest Arkansas. The organization was throwing around ideas on how to fundraise for a particular event that they had hopes of hosting. Anderson brought together the two great ideas. All proceeds from the Swetnam Challenge will go directly to the Down Syndrome Connection's I Can Shine event being held this summer. More on that just ahead. Down syndrome is a genetic disorder in which the person has 47 chromosomes instead of 46, leaving the affected with intellectual and physical delays. Nationally, 1 in 800 babies is born with the condition. The Down Syndrome Connection is a national organization, but has been in Northwest Arkansas since 2005. Dr. Marie Wood is a psychologist and vice president of the board of directors.
It was founded by the families. parents felt like they needed a place to be able to talk about Down syndrome and how we could help our children. It's since grown to be not only for children, but also for the babies, but also for older kids.
Dr. Wood says that it is important that young children with Down syndrome get the proper therapies, such as physical help. Many don't learn to walk until they are 2 years old. Speech and occupational therapies are also important for development. The organization makes connections, holding educational meetings for parents to learn such things as how to receive a Medicaid waiver for treatments. But they also hold parties and fashion shows so that those in the Down syndrome community can meet and socialize with one another. This summer, Down Syndrome Connection hopes to hold the I Can Shine event. That's where the Sweatnam Challenge comes in. The hope is that Sunday's event will raise the funds to bring the national program to Northwest Arkansas and that all fees for participants will be covered. The I Can Shine program will teach 40 children affected with Down syndrome and other disabilities how to ride a bike. Participants will receive 75-minute training sessions every day for 5 days. The program has an 80% success rate. Riding a bike is a valuable skill for everyone.
Remember when you rode a bike? I mean, it was like a beautiful freedom. It's different than, it gets them so that they can go to resorts, you can go anywhere and rent a bike, and you can get on the bike with your family and go. Whereas before it was, well, I don't think we can ride bikes because we can't accommodate you. We don't have the trike. We don't have the recumbent bike. So this should be a really great thing. And also, gosh, we've got Skull Creek Trail, and I'd love to see our kids riding that.
Dr. Wood knows the importance. Her 15-year-old daughter, Mary, has Downs and doesn't yet know how to ride a bike. As it turns out, clubhouse trainer and Sweatnam Challenge organizer Bryce Anderson knows Mary.
He's followed her to Special Olympics where she swims, but he also has fallen in love with Mary, I believe. So when he discovered that there was a way that he could help or he could fund this I Can Shine program, he was right on top of that. He thought this would be a great thing for the community and especially the children with Down syndrome or children with disabilities to really learn that. And Bryce is very committed to physical fitness, and he really is committed to people with Down syndrome.
He's modest, though he does mention his trips to the Special Olympics in Searcy. Though Sunday's festivities are open to the public, a special course has been made for those in the community with special needs. Bryce says it isn't necessarily about physical challenges, but rather more about having fun and connecting with others.
We're going to do some hopscotch stuff on the sidewalks there, and depending on how muddy it is, considering we've gotten so much snow and that all has to melt, we will do a few things with the trees. We have a fun one where we're tying a belt around their waist with the back has a tissue box and there's balls in the tissue box and they got to shake their butt to make the balls fall out.
Many in the area have come on board with the Sweatnam Challenge and have provided great help to Anderson, in particular the Greek community at the University of Arkansas. The chair of the committee is president of the Tri-Delta sorority and has managed to make this a Greek life event. Festivities will begin at 11:30 a.m. with hamburgers and hot dogs. At 1:30, the obstacle course opens to sororities and fraternities who will be competing as houses, but there will also be a male and female winner. At 3:30, the special needs course opens and the general public will be allowed to enter the physical challenge as well. Each of Clubhouse's 5 trainers will set up a station with 3 to 4 circuit-type challenges, using various equipment such as TRX straps, kettlebells, and Dynamax balls. To move from one station to another will also prove to be a challenge.
Station 1 to Station 2, they're bear crawling. Station 2 to Station 3, they'll jump on 1 foot. Station 3 to Station 4, they will be doing a egg carry. An egg carry is basically putting an egg on a spoon in your mouth, and you have to walk from one place to another, put the spoon and egg down, and then run to Station 4. Station 4, they will have to do a farmer's carry. Men will have a weighted kettlebell in each hand, and the females will have a lighter weighted kettlebell. They'll have to walk to a certain place, bring the kettlebells back before they can go to Station 5. After Station 5, they will have to do a large lap around Old Main Lawn to finish.
There is a fee to register, but remember, all proceeds go toward the Down Syndrome Connection of Northwest Arkansas's I Can Shine event. To register, to volunteer, or for more information, visit DSC, NWA.com, or search Swetnam Challenge on Facebook. This is Ozarks at Large.
The Soweto Gospel Choir will take to the stage of the Walton Arts Center this evening as part of their 10x10 art series. Yesterday, Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellum spoke with one of the founding members of the group.
I have to cry. Oh, I've got many rivers to cry.
Jimmy Gioni is an original member of the Soweto Gospel Choir, joining the ensemble for their first performance in 2002. He's toured all over the world with the choir since. Yesterday, briefly in between stops on the latest North American tour for the Soweto Gospel Choir, Jimmy talked about the approach the choir takes to deciding which songs to perform and record, from gospel songs members have heard growing up in South Africa to covers of Western pop songs like Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water. Jimmy Gioni says the choir decides as a unit what songs to record and what songs to perform live.
Yeah, we work with the team that we sit down and we discuss the album. We discuss the album, we sit down, there are songs that we want to put there, and we also come up with a theme, we discuss that. Yeah, so yeah. The teamwork, it's not only one person doing it.
Many of the songs that are on CDs, including the latest Divine Decade, might be unfamiliar to American audiences, but some are not. There's Many Rivers to Cross, the Jimmy Cliff song. Yes. And in the past, you've taken songs by such American artists as Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, and we're still doing that song on the show even now. Preach Over Troubled Water. So yeah. We as a choir, like we like to explore things when musically, because we would take something from nothing and do something out of that, and like we would take a song like last time before we came on tour, we did a song with James Brown, you know that I feel good. You see that song?
Yeah. Oh yes. Yes.
So, yeah, we like exploring. We like experimenting things and see. Because music is all about, you know, experimenting and getting new ideas and all that. So, yeah.
I know that a performance by the choir is one for the ears, but it's also for the eyes. There's drumming, there's dancing, there's choreography. This is a high-energy show.
It is a very high-energy show, yes, definitely. Actually, you said it right. It's a very high-energy show because you got to listen, you got to look, and you got to look carefully. You got to stand up and dance. You got to be part of the choir.
Choir's resume is daunting. They've performed with Peter Gabriel at the Academy Awards. They've collaborated with Bono. They backed up Celine Dion during a tour in Africa. They have delivered command performances for national leaders. They toured Germany as the opening act for the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But Jimmy says there are still a couple of goals left for the choir. They want to record a song with Aretha Franklin, and they want to perform two songs for somebody else.
One day, when God says yes, just go and perform for the President Obama. Just two songs.
Ah.
Just two songs for him. He would stand there. We'll stand near the choir, and it will just hit it.
Well, I think this is going to be your first time in Fayetteville, Arkansas, correct?
Yes.
Well, we're looking forward to the performance. Anything else we should know before you hit the stage tomorrow night?
You know what? Tomorrow night, as I'm saying, it's going to be fireworks.
The Soweto Gospel Choir performs tonight at Walton Arts Center as part of the venue's 10 by 10 series. Most tickets are $10. You can learn more at waltonartcenter.org. And you can learn more about the choir, their music, and their charitable foundations at their website, SowetoGospelChoir.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. On the Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, you'll hear some of the music you hear in the background right now. Believe it or not, that is rock drummer Ginger Baker off of his jazz CD with Charlie Hayden and Bill Frisell. We'll also hear music from Jesse Lynch and his trio. Jesse is a New York City jazz pianist and composer who will be performing as part of Live on Stage in Northwest Arkansas this Sunday up at the Aaron's Arts Center. And in addition, we'll hear music from Michelle Petrucciani, Dave Pietro, and much more. That's Shades of Jazz, Friday at 10 p.m.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Uniontown.
Uniontown?
Mm-hmm.
Where's that?
Right on the edge of the Ozark St. Francis National Forest.
Hey, mm-hmm. We heard about that earlier.
We did.
Yeah. Well, on yesterday's edition of Ozarks at Large, we had a giveaway, a chance to win mm-hmm. a giveaway. You asked a question for a correct answer, and the winner would win four tickets to Trike Theater's production of Romeo and Juliet, which starts tonight and runs through Sunday.
Mm-hmm. And also four Malco movie passes.
Right.
In honor of Romeo and Juliet, we were talking about Leonardo DiCaprio being in that movie in the 90s. And while he hasn't won an Academy Award, he's been nominated for several Golden Globes.
That's right.
He's actually won some of those. So we asked how many Golden Globes has he won?
Correct answer is two.
Mm-hmm. And the winner who had the correct answer and whose name we selected is Jessica Keehee. So congratulations to Jessica. We will contact you and let you know you've won.
All right. That sounds good.
Thanks for listening.
Right. Well, yesterday evening on the University of Arkansas campus, there was sort of a notable speaker as part of the Distinguished Lecture Series.
Yes. Condoleezza Rice, former Secretary of State, was on campus yesterday. We had hoped to cover that. Unfortunately, the press conference they had yesterday afternoon was canceled due to scheduling conflicts. And then they were only allowing 3 minutes of the lecture to be videotaped, but with no audio. So
doesn't really make a good story for radio.
Doesn't help radio super.
But you went.
I went and enjoyed it. You know, she talked to students about things they should do in college, you know, finding your passion, finding role models, trying something hard and studying abroad. But she also talked about some of her experiences with international affairs. One of the stories she told that was really interesting was she made the remark that Putin is an intimidator. And to give an example, she had mentioned in 2007 when she visited him about their relations with Georgia, she made the remark that, you know, any move against Georgia would affect Russian-U.S. relations. And I think he was upset by this. So he sort of stood up from the table and was kind of peering over her. And she said, well, I instinctively stood up too. And she said, you know, in heels, I'm 5'10". He's 5'7". So we kind of stared at each other for a minute and then sat back down. So it was an interesting conversation. Always excited when the university has their Distinguished Lecture Series and look forward to the next one.
They bring in some good people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do. All right. Well, Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And we'll be back together for an all-new daily edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow.